Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Freeman, celebrating 26 years of sobriety today.
Going home. That's thank you, Albert. Somebody let the cat out of the bag, and it wasn't JC this time. But anyway, my name is Freeman, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Freeman.
And I was told that you're supposed to share your experience, strength, and hope here. One thing I'd like to congratulate all the chip takers that was a herd. That was a whole new crowd. We got a whole new crowd. The rest of us can take a month off. I'm telling you, we got a whole new crew coming in. But anyway, you know, that shows you that something's happening out there. It must not be working. I know it didn't work when I was out there. You know, I don't want to say a lot of people. I don't know what you guys did. I know what I did. I started drinking when I was like 13, 14 years old. By the time I was 16, I was probably a full-blown alcoholic. School got in the way. School got in the way of my drinking, so we had to do away with the drinking. Oh, no, I quit school. That's right. I kept on drinking. I know it said if drinking gets in the way of your school, you might be a heavy drinker. But if school gets in the way of your drinking, then you're probably an alcoholic. And that's what happened here. I had to. I started at the bottom and I stayed there. I didn't. One of these guys that came in here, you know, had a success story for 20, 30 years working, doing all that stuff. No, I started drinking at a young age, and that's where I stayed. I stayed right there, drinking downtown. Drinking with my uncle, my dad, my brothers, whoever I could hang with. Because, you know, at 16 years old, a lot of people didn't want you hanging around with them. I'd be down there down at the park down there where a lot of by the train track where a lot of old guys gathered down there to drink. And I'd go drink with them, and then they'd kick me out because I was too young. They thought they were going to get in trouble. But anyway, it's not the way I planned on living my life. You know, I just didn't know what it was. I just didn't know what it was. I had that mental obsession coupled with a physical compulsion. It means I'm built different than the other guy. I'm built different than the normal person. A normal person had a beer or had a drink and they went home. Or when you're 14, 15, 16, you have a little fun, go fishing, whatever. I mean, I did that stuff for a little while. It lasted a few years. And then all of a sudden, drinking just kicked in more or less every chance I got or whatever. It's just, you know, until something happened. Either you wreck a car, you go to jail, something would stop you for a couple of days. I stopped many times, by the way. I could stop a lot of times, but I just couldn't stay stopped. That was the problem that I had. And that's where Alcoholics Anonymous comes in. You know, I didn't bump into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 14 or 16, and I bumped into it more or less when I was 33 the first round. So I came in here, and it said today's my birthday, October 26, 1981, and I stayed sober for 6 years. I thought I had the world by the tail, man. Everybody knew who I was. I was secretary in meetings. I was sponsoring people. Life was good. And something happened. I got drunk one day. Next day I went back to AA. I stayed there 3 years. And then I got drunk for 9 months. And then that sealed the deal. Now when you read chapter 3, I got nothing to say, baby. It's all right there. Except for the fact I never had the ability. I never lost the ability to drink. I never had the ability to drink. When I got drunk the first time, I got sick. I blacked out. Couldn't tell you what I did. All I know is it must have been fun because I could not wait to do it again. And a couple of friends I had were shaking their heads and said, "This is not for me. I can't do this." And obviously, those weren't my friends no more. That was the end of that friendship there. And all the people I hung with either drank or, you know, were thinking about drinking like me. I was either hungover, drinking, or contemplating it. One of the three, you know, or just plain hungover. And I'll tell you, after a while of drinking, those hangovers get a little worse. They progress. But, you know, when you're drinking out there at the bar, one of the things the bartender does not tell you that you are in the grip of a progressive disease or a progressive illness. And it always gets worse and never gets better. They never tell you that stuff. And everybody sitting at the bar next to you tells you how good it was, what it could have been, would have been, and should have been, but nobody tells you how it really was. I didn't know people hid their alcohol. I didn't know people stole money from their mother to buy booze. My mother, she thought everything cost $20. She'd give me $20 to get a half gallon of ice cream, and you know, you get the ice cream and $20 is gone. Loaf of bread, gallon of milk. Years later when I got sober, she sent me to the store. She told me, damn, prices went down, huh? She finally got some change back. But, you know, that stuff eats away at you morally, you know, when you take from your own mother, when you take from your own kids. You know, I didn't have that family planning thing. I just got married and had kids. I thought that's what people did. I didn't know you're supposed to have a job, get a house, you know, have license and insurance. Nobody told me about that stuff. That came later. But anyway, my kids survived. I might say I do have one that's MIA in Sonoma County. I have one that wasn't afflicted, and the other one's been sober 5 years. So that's batting 2 out of 3, I guess, in that particular round. But alcohol took me down. You know, it's a path that you don't want to go down. You wake up with people you don't know who the hell they are. Wake up in places you don't know how you got there. You know, I remember one time I woke up and I didn't know where the hell I was. I thought, finally I left town. Finally I got on one of these drunks you hear people talk about. They're always traveling and everything. And me, I thought, man, I finally did it. I was in Santa Rosa. And I walked over. I was in a restaurant, so I had a cup of coffee. And I walked over to the phone book to look at the phone. And it was Idlewood 333, whatever that was. That in Sonoma County, that's Hillsburg. That's like going from here to Tulare. You know, that was my big trip. You know, that was the extent of it right there. A lot of things I started off to do, I never did do. I never got to finish. When I was a young guy, when I started off, before I started drinking, I was like 6 years old. My mom, because my dad drank, so my mom should take his kids out pick prunes, so we'd have clothes for school. So from 6 to 13, I was out picking prunes. Then when I got a little older, we started cutting wood. You know, career change. You know, so we started cutting wood, and I did that for a while, and then milked some cows, worked on a dairy. But these are all part-time jobs for a little while. Then my mom started a boarding house, and I started cooking for her. And then she fired me about 186 times, but, you know, because you never knew when I was going to show up. So that was my schedule. When he's sober, he works. When he's drinking, where is he? But anyway, that led to, you know, but still I was trying to quit drinking. I had the wife and the kids. I wanted for these kids what I felt was more than what I had in life. I wanted to give for them what I didn't have, and I couldn't do it. And it kind of bothered me, you know. I couldn't get a house. I couldn't hold a job. Couldn't get a job. So it's just not a good place to be, you know, when you're thinking that way and you're wondering. I used to lay on the lawn over there in Rincon Valley, and a summer day when I'd be all hung over, I'd put a sheet on top of me and turn the sprinkler on, you know, keep cool. But I'd watch this guy next door, and he'd come home 5 or 5:30 and pick up the newspaper and pet the dog and go into the house, you know. I don't think he had a picket fence, but if you want to put one there, go ahead. You know, it's your imagination. I'll just project what I saw. But he'd pick that up and he'd go in the house every day. And I wondered why I couldn't be like that guy. You know, I couldn't be like that guy. I'd get up and I'd go somewhere and I may not come back for 3 or 4 days. It all depends on what happened. And everybody knew I wasn't supposed to drink even at a young age, you know. You don't take booze at that guy's house. And it progressed, like I said, you know, from fishing, having fun, to getting drunk, to being unemployable. I got to where I came home one day and I kicked in the back door. You know, I threw a chair through the window. I had a loaded gun. I can't tell you what was on my mind because I was out of it. A sheriff came over and he took the bolt out of the gun and hit it and left the gun there. And I guess this left me passed out there. But, you know, that was not what I wanted for the kids. My little girl saw this, and I have one child that she's still, she hears real loud noises. If she hears people talking and voices go up, she starts looking for a place to go. Excuse me. She starts looking for a place to hide. And I did that. But that daughter today loves me. A couple of times on Father's Day, she came down, picked me up, took me up to Sonoma County, and took a whole week off of work. And she's a workaholic. She don't take time off for nothing. She works sick and everything. Took a whole week off, and anywhere I wanted to go, I go. Gave me keys to a truck, because they know when I go there, I go to the 7 a.m. attitude adjustment meeting. It starts at 7, just like I do today. I go to the one over there at the Hole in the Wall, we call it, Pitch Street. Some people heard of it, some people never heard of it. But it's an awesome little place, you know. I call that my home group now, and I'm proud to say that's my home group. And I've got a few members from that place here in this room tonight, and I really appreciate it, the support. Anyway, so this drinking thing, as you see, it wasn't very productive. You know, I wasn't a very productive person in society. I was doing life on the installment plan. I wasn't one of these guys that got 100 DUIs. I got one. 1977, the year that Elvis died. And that was my one drunk driving. That was it. And but does that qualify me for an alcoholic? You know, you don't need to have one or ten. There's people that are drinking themselves to death at home. They're working every day, pay their taxes, pay their rent, but they're drinking themselves into oblivion every night. Those are the ones that are more dangerous because they're not getting in trouble. They've got nothing to see. And they, you know, can't say they wake up dead, but a lot of them die. Sometimes just in a head-on collision. You know, I wrecked a lot of cars. I hit a lot of things in Sonoma County. I'm proud to say that I never smacked nothing in Visalia except for one car. He had it coming, stopped in the middle of the road. He stopped, I didn't. But I never caused no trouble down here. I've been to court. That's because I got my grandkids. I raised them for 21 years. You know, I went down and got, I had to go to court to be conservative of them or to take care of them. And I went to court for that. I've been to jail because I carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Been to the Honor Farm to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've never been there since I quit drinking. It seemed to be hand in hand me going to jail and drinking. I've never went to jail sober, you know, except to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so there was some new people here, I noticed. I remember one guy I heard 4 days, 5 days. You know, and if you're kind of wondering how the hell is this thing going to work, you keep showing up. They read how it works almost at every meeting. Every meeting they tell you how it works. And then you know who's going to make it, who ain't going to make it, because it tells you that too. Then they got the third, then they read the chapter 3, a portion of that. And that tells you some interesting stuff, you know, that we're delusional. You know, we're on a flight from reality. So I'd like to know how any of us can really think our way out of this deal, because we've got a lot of intelligent people in this room. I'm not going to insult them. They're very highly intelligent. But intelligence has nothing to do with alcoholism, and you can't get out of it with an education or a degree. I buried a guy at 55 years old. He had 2 degrees. He told me that his brain got him into it. His brain's going to get him out of it. And I tell him, your brain's the one that's going to kill you. And it did. He got sober for 9 months, and he decided that his mind could handle the situation, and he died. He was a healthy guy. You know, he was a healthy guy. He should have lived to be 100, you know, according to his doctor. But alcohol took him down in a short amount of time. It progressed. It got worse. And all he could do is take his disability check over to the store and give it to him, walk over, get a pack of cigarettes and 2 beers, and he was drunk for the day right there. Make that trip every day like clockwork until he died. That was the extent of his 2 degrees. It just didn't get him nowhere. But drinking has destroyed a lot of people's lives, a lot of kids, a lot of families, a lot of wives, a lot of husbands, a lot of aunts, uncles, grandmas, all of that stuff. I know a lot of grandparents are raising kids today because of drugs and alcohol. And it's not nothing new no more, you know, to find out that the grandparents are raising the kids. In fact, my one daughter in Sonoma County is raising my other daughter's son. I got the grandparents up in Clear Lake is raising the daughter because of alcohol. But the thing is, you know, the good news is that there's hope here. And if you, you know, just get a big book. I tried to see if they had one. It should be, and I'm going to say it, there should be a big book sitting right here. It belongs to this meeting. It should sit here so you people can see the book. And when someone's talking about it, you know what the hell we're talking about. But anyway, most people know what the big book is anyway. You get a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, get yourself a sponsor, and you go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get on with the business of living. And that's what it's all about. You get on the business of living. I've seen people get their kids back, their wives back, their cars back. Some got drunk because they got their kids back, their wives back, their cars back. You know, it don't really matter. I know one guy, every time he shows up, he gets a good job, he gets a car, and he's gone. You know, you think if he just quit working and retire and don't drive, he'd be out with a sober guy. But, you know, you can't give this thing away. You got to have the willingness to be willing. And you can't give that away to anybody. You've got to have it yourself. And this is one dark spot you have to walk alone. You have to go through that little dark spot alone to admit that you're an alcoholic. If you're still having fun, I'm sure you wouldn't want to be in this room tonight. And if you're forced here by the court, well, then maybe they're thinking you're not having the right kind of fun. But the whole thing is, I didn't come here by the court. I came here by a total stranger. They have a saying, and I don't think it's in the book, but they tell you, in fact, I know it's not in the book. It says that when the student's ready, a teacher will appear. And you hear that all the time, and people don't know what it means sometimes. Well, I'm living proof that that's such a thing. I was doing volunteer work in Sonoma County at a food bank. And I hadn't drank in 30 days before I started that. I was trying to quit that one more time. And I kept thinking, if I did something, if I got constructive, try to help somebody, maybe, you know, something will happen for me, you know. So I started volunteering. You know, I'd do all kinds of things. Go out, pick apples and stuff. You bag food up. People come. You give it out to them and everything. So I was doing that for 30 days. And I was also sober for 30 days. So probably sober 60 days if you add them together. But the whole thing was a guy came down out of the other building next door to me, came down the stairs. I was out the backside, I don't know, having a cigarette or something. And he says, why don't you go to a meeting? Just like that. Why don't you go to a meeting? Oh, what kind of meeting? You know, I thought maybe the food bank was having a meeting. No, it was an AA meeting, he said. And then he said the craziest thing. He said, well, you know, he told me where a meeting was. He said, I might be there. He said, but I won't be there for you. So I already had my first resentment before I ever got here. You know, because I couldn't figure, what the hell are you talking about? You want me to go to a meeting? You want to be there for me? Shit. But anyway, I went to that meeting, and I heard a lady speak. It was a lady speaker at the time, and she talked about drinking the way nobody else talked about it. People downtown never talked about that. You know, it's amazing. We have a gentleman in Bridge Street always points out to us that this is the only outfit that alcoholics take care of alcoholics. You don't go to a bunch of people that have cancer and say, cure me. You know, you don't go some a broken leg, go to a bunch of other people with broken legs and say, fix my leg. But here, one alcoholic can help another. We don't fix them. God does. But we can point them in the right direction. And by the way, that lady shared, she hid booze behind the toilet, the guy did, behind that little spot between the wall. You can get a half pint down there. You know, if you're lucky, your wife don't look behind there and find it and dump it out. And sometimes inside, but you got to remember, if it ain't plastic, it can make a lot of noise when you flush. Ding, 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 you know. And, you know, you hide them in numerous places. We have them everywhere, you know. I hid one bottle one time underneath a bush through a picket fence. I just set it in there on the other side of the bush through the fence, and I went out drinking with my uncle and my brother, and I come back, and I'm like a Days of Wine and Roses. I'm down on my hands and knees trying to find this damn bottle. I'm crawling around in the dark looking for it. Sure enough, I never found it. The next day, I look in the backyard, and I see all the stuff piled up, a ball, a stick, some other stuff, and I kind of wandered over there, and my dog had grabbed the bottle and put it over there. He grabbed it with everything else. That's not the first time he did me wrong. He took one beer while we were having a barbecue and poked a hole in it. But, you know, we're so intelligent when we drink. I mean, we're so, you know, even the non-people with non-degrees have a degree when it comes to drinking. We think we're so hip, slick, and cool. But they made a song for us. You know, who do you think you're fooling? You know, I ain't going to sing because I can't sing. But, you know, who do you think you're fooling? We're fooling ourselves. We're fooling ourselves all the time thinking that we can do this thing and we're different than everybody else. I've heard people come in, they're too old. One guy was 65. And his wife was giving him trouble. She wanted to leave him. He didn't do something about his drinking. But he said, I'm too old to be an alcoholic. So he only stayed a week or two. And then he left. I don't know what happened with him. But I know one thing, that if he picked up a drink again, we know what happened to him. Because inevitably it gets worse. Never better. Never, ever better. My drinking went from, I never was a daily drinker. I was a guy that got drunk three or four times a month maybe, or, you know, went fishing, got drunk for 3 days, maybe sober for a week, maybe two, and then get drunk again for a day or two or maybe more. But when I went back that time, I said I went back out for the 3 years. I went 6 years sober, went out one night, 3 years sober. Boy, I went out for like 9 months. I drank every single day of that 9 months. I didn't draw one sober breath during that whole time. that I worked. I used up all my vacation time, CTO time, sick leave, every leave that you could possibly come up with. I worked for the state. You know, we only work 2 days a year anyway. But I used up all that, and finally I think the supervisor called me home and said, you better get your butt back, you're going to fire you. So I went back and I managed to, it took a while, and I knew about AA, of course, because I was there. And I knew it was there, but I couldn't not take that drink. I had trouble. I had just about gotten sober enough where I figured I'd go the next day when my daughter handed my son-in-law a wine cooler. And out of respect, she asked me if I wanted one. She didn't want me drinking, but she would never pour my booze out because she knew it didn't work. But she just said, out of respect, you want one? And I said, no. No, I don't want one. And I drank it. And there I was for another 6 days. It took another 6 days before I could crawl down to a meeting that was started by my sponsor called Grit and Win on a Thursday night. And I volunteered down there to set up chairs and to make coffee. And I set up chairs and made coffee for 9 months at that meeting. Even though they're only 6 months committed, I wanted to make sure I had an extra 3 months for a good measure. And that's what I did, and I stayed there, and I kind of went back working with my sponsor. One thing I appreciate about my sponsors, they didn't fire me. Some people get drunk, and the first thing to do, their sponsor fires them. That's when they need them the most. When they need them the most, when they're down and out, then they fire them and don't want to talk to them no more. No, he hung with me. He told me just to redouble my efforts, and I did. I went to more meetings. I read the book more. Worked the steps more, preached out to others more, did whatever I could do more, worked at H&I, took a commitment with those guys, did Honor Farm for a while, and, that clock's moving, all right, and the best way to stay sober is to get in the middle of the program, you know, to stay in the middle and get involved. Well, I like the other day, we went to Bridge Street, and for reasons obscure to me, I guess one of the secretaries didn't show up. So he'd be the guy that opened the door and make the coffee. Well, somebody opened the door. Another guy started making coffee. Another one spread out all the books. And another one put out candy. You could just tell, you know, there's people that get involved. Then you got the other guys that sit there. And when you get the pot and you hold it up, you go... Then you got the other guys that do something. The ones that are doing something are doing the deal. The ones that get involved and start secretarying and getting into action and getting into service, they're the ones that stay. And sometimes that commitment is the only thing that gets you back during the hard times. When it's so easy to say, I don't want to show up, then you realize, whoa, I got to be there that Tuesday night or at Tuesday noon or 7 a.m. at Bridge Street or wherever it is. Hell, I'm still secretary on Saturday. I've been doing it for 5 years, even though I'm not doing it. My name's on there, though. So tell Bill. But we've got another gentleman that's actually doing it. But that's okay. It don't matter. What's important is it gets done. The door gets open, the coffee gets made, and there's somebody there to greet the newcomer if somebody should come. And I learned a lot of things in Alcoholics. I learned more about Alcoholics Anonymous in the last 2 or 3 months. I've been having medical troubles. And I'll tell you what, Alcoholics Anonymous came to my rescue. I was telling somebody the other day or today, I could have wrote a book on chicken soup. I had so many different people bringing me chicken soup. I had all these different, you could look and see how the different people make the soup. But they delivered it to my house. I got to go to Stanford tomorrow. And somebody said that at a meeting when I wasn't even there, and a gentleman stepped up and said, I'll take him. I called him, and I said, well, are you working? He says, don't worry, I'll make it a priority. Who in the hell, when I was drinking, nobody ever made me a priority. I'll tell you that. I was kind of low on the totem pole, you know what I mean? But that's Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that the people that are new here, you know, that you hear something that will bring you back. There's hope in these rooms. There's no hope out there drinking when you don't want to drink. When you wake up all hungover and laying in the ditch or the road. Hell, I was laying on the road one time. My hair was all wet. I thought the fire department put my hair out. I thought it caught on fire. Back then, I had some hair. You know, I used to swoop it up. Jesus Christ, no. What they did was try to wake me up. I ran into a bottle of Mad Dog 2020, and I was trying to... I was trying to prove a point down at the park. You know, I didn't quite make it. Wound up in the middle of Sunset Avenue in Santa Rosa. Not a good neighborhood either to be laid out in the middle of the road. But I'll tell you what, one day on the way home, I saw a Corvette sitting there with both doors open. There was a guy stretched out on the sidewalk, and that thing was running. Man, was it sweet looking. And believe me, that was in my drinking days. I could have had a Corvette. But I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I scared myself. I probably would have wrapped that thing around a tree and killed myself. But that's the things we do. I was driving home in Alexander Valley one time. My neighbor out there, Rod Zanellini, big guy, about 6'4", 250 pounds. Back in those days, I was a youngster, kind of smaller. And he was passed out in his damn truck. You try to kick him on the shoe, but kind of run at the same time. And he kind of woke up swinging, you know what I mean? But that's where booze takes you. I woke up and I feel the cement floor. I'm in jail. You know, I woke up, you know, up against a rock. A police officer doing his job, and he's going to let me go home with my dad, and I see the badge, and there goes my mouth. That thing, that mouth got me in trouble. Jesus, it got me in trouble. I don't know why, where that came from. You know, they've never done anything that's wrong. You know, it's just this thing. Speaking of the mind, I always tell people, you know, if you could ask anybody who committed suicide, I guess we'll talk them into it. So if you're going to get out of drinking with your brain, you're in deep shit, I'll tell you right now. Because that thing will take you, that thing will tell you some strange stuff. You know what I mean? If you just think about it sometime. When you're sitting here, I'm in the morning trying to pray and meditate. All of a sudden, I'm off down the road robbing banks and stuff. You never know where I'm going. You know, you got to... That's reality. This is fantasy. You got to remember that thing up there. And it gets you in all kinds of trouble. You know, it gives you ideas. I've had ideas that nearly killed me. You know, nearly killed me. And you run by somebody, you just call somebody. You get one of these crazy ideas, you call them. A member of Alcoholics Anonymous, don't call a regular person because you might get arrested and you might get hauled off to the funny farm. But I was listening to the guy saying something the other day outside and across the street at Bridge Street by his pickup. He was talking, and man, he said something, and it was so hilarious because I think the same stuff. But if I said that to a normal person, they'd think you're crazy. You know, that's why it takes one to understand. It takes one alcoholic to understand another alcoholic. We know what a hangover's like. I was gassing up my truck the other day, and there was a guy kind of sizing me up from a distance. You know the type, shaking, bloodshot eyes. Looked like he didn't know if he was shooting pool or playing basketball. And finally he came over and he said, you know, I said, I need some change, you know, I need 75 cents. I go, what do you need? I just want to see if you'd tell me. And he actually was honest. He said, I need a beer. And I said, you know what, I know you need a beer. And I gave him the 75 cents. Because I know there's a difference between wanting to drink and needing to drink. And when you're hungover, the only thing that's going to help is a little hair of the hound. There it is. You know, and then, you know, if things go wrong, you're going to be right back where you started. I met one guy right at Bridge Street. He was 12 feet from glory, man. If he'd have made it another 12 feet, he'd have been in the room. And he wanted to know, how is he going to get past that? There's only one thing going to get past that. One, don't put it in. Two, it's going to take time. But you're in the right spot. Come on in. So he took off and never saw him again. But, you know, you can't give it to them that don't want it. They say that this is for people that want it, not for people who need it. Because there's a lot of people that need it, but they don't take it. It's for the ones that want it, to pick it up. The ones that are sick and tired of being sick and tired. The ones that are hurting and know what it's like to hurt their kids and their spouses and their families and their employers, all that stuff, and they're just tired of it. And I know that feeling. I lost my mojo a while back. I couldn't eat. I lost some weight. I couldn't eat because I got a medical problem. Every time I eat, it started hurting. So I quit eating for a while, and I'm trying to live on broth and water and everything else, and I just got sick and tired of it. I just didn't care no more. And I called my oldest daughter up because I said, I lost my mojo. I lost my spirit. I'm not a guy that can live without a spirit. I love people. I love people. I love alcoholics. I love to watch them and listen to them and hang with them and talk with them and all that stuff that goes with it. All that stuff. I love that. When I lost that, that was a horrible place to be. That was almost like when alcohol became a necessity and not a luxury. It was almost the same place. And I called her up. I called her up Friday morning. I called her Friday morning. When I went to the hospital right after that, when I opened my eyes up, there she was. And I got my mojo back. I had to be my firstborn. I don't know why. No offense to get the second or third child, but it was for some reason I knew it had to be her. I had that connection. And she talked to me, and then it turned out she stayed an extra few days, and then I found out she was having some trouble. I actually gave her a reflection, a 12 by 12 in a big book. She's not an alcoholic, but there's some stuff in there that she needed to look at and to deal with, and I told her that this would help her lay out a plan for that, and that's okay too. But I wouldn't bring her to Bridge Street because she's not an alcoholic. Because I know damn well Mark would throw her out and I'd have a resentment. But that's the way we roll down there. We have to do it. We have to watch our back and we have to take care of each other because this is our lifeline. If we lose this program, we lose our life. And we have to take care of it the best we can. And it takes everybody. It takes all of us. The newcomers, 4 days, 5 days, 100 years, if anybody lives that long. All that stuff. We need them all. Because if just one person, if you ever showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous and the door was locked, that'd be one cold day right there. That'd be one cold day. So if you don't have a sponsor, I suggest you get one. It's a simple matter of listening to somebody you hear. Maybe you feel you can relate with them. You don't want to get a total opposite, maybe, but somebody you can relate with. And then you ask them. And if they're working the program, they'll help you, or they'll help you find one. You know, if they won't, or temporarily do it, see what happens. You know, I ask people when they want to sponsor, they want me to sponsor them, I tell them to call me for 30 days. Every day for 30 days because you're undisciplined. I got one guy in the room here that haven't met up to that. I have another guy that's called me for nearly every day for 2 years. In fact, he got a liver transplant and called me from the hospital. Holy Jesus, you know. But you just don't know which way the thing is going to fall. But watching him grow and another gentleman in the room and other people and a lady friend of mine that skipped out early to go to the club, to watch him grow and make it. I saw one that looked like she was on the way of going out. And all of a sudden she started showing up, sitting down talking to people before and after the meeting. And now she's happy as a dead pig in the sunshine. He did say it. Anyway, if you don't know what that means, Mark will explain to you after the meeting. I'd like to thank everybody from everybody for showing up tonight. I know you didn't come here for me, but you know you would have had James. I apologize for that, but he's actually sick. I talked to him earlier. So this is what you got. Is it Tim Till? Is that the time? Is it?
You're good, sir.
I don't know. Well, anyway, is there anything else you want to hear about? Let's see. You know, the program works. That's all I can tell you is that it works. But you got to work it. You got the promises there, and it's kind of funny. It says they all materialize after you work for it. And then it says something profound, too. It says that alcoholics, you know, that you people out here, each and every one of you, have the ability, you know, to avert death and misery for others. Now, when I look around this room, kind of scary-looking bunch, that sounds almost impossible. But it's been going on since the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bridge Street's not the only where love is spawned, by the way. All the meetings. Even Rule 62 with my friend Captain Kirk over there. And then I got Red Cross Albert, and there's no Red Cross no more, but we know why. Anyway, I'd like to thank everybody here. And they're the people that are working the deal. Everybody that's working the deal. And the ones that want to work the deal, just ask. And somebody here will guide you and show you. Because nobody showed me or went through the steps with me, I'd be dead. I wouldn't be here. I'd have been a goner a long time ago. Somebody took the time for me, so somebody will take the time for you. So God bless you and good night.